You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
Hi, DXers. Welcome to Market Scope for June 2013. This month, we're going back into the AirCheck library about 30 years and look at some old radio, including two 50,000-watt monsters. I hope you enjoy.
What's your fella's name?
Bobby.
Bobby. Are there any songs with his name in it?
Bobby's Girl.
Which one?
Bobby's Girl.
I want to be
right.
Bobby's girl. Is Bobby listening right now?
Yes, he is.
Okay, you give him a big kiss.
Okay.
And you keep it on which station now?
KY
Playdate, 1962.
Doggies, 1260 KYA. This is the place, y'all. If you'd like to hear something very special, like an instant request, and then send it out to somebody, I hope you'll call me right now. 478-3240. I know the lines are jammed up. We're trying to get to you as quickly as we can. That's our duty here. Now, let's go back to 1968 for the Classics 4 with Gary Mora and Spooky. Say, Spooky. Doggies. Memories on KYA.
In the cool of the evening when everything is getting kind of groovy.
KFI, I'm Bobby Rich at 1238. If you're out driving around with the kids in the car trying to find something nice to do this afternoon, you may want to check this out. The Children's Home Society out in Woodland Hills, they're putting on their Easter Fantasyland Extravaganza. It's out at the Farm School. That's on Oxnard Street in Woodland Hills. It's on right now until 4 this afternoon. You can go out there and play games, make their own bunny ears. Make their own bunny ears. Listen to Easter stories and lots of fun things, including finding out what deviled eggs smell like if you leave them out of the refrigerator for more than 3 days. One of the highlights of the show.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
KFI is the station that's given away thousands and thousands of dollars.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. I can't believe this. This is great.
And a lot of brand new cars.
Jeanette from KFI, the amazing AM. I don't believe it. I'm a winner.
If you want our money on our new cars, pick up your free KFI Want a Chevette from KFI bumper sticker at your nearby participating Southern California Chevy dealer. Stick it on immediately. You never know when the KFI Cash Car Spotter will be taking off again to make you the winner of free money or a new car.
I'm very excited. I don't believe it. This is the first time I've ever won anything like this before. And this is unbelievable. My prayers have been answered.
Stick it on and keep it on. The amazing AM.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
KFI, former Doobie Brother Patrick Simmons, so wrong, on the amazing music AM. Come on, Eileen. 1252. This is Bobby Rich under cloudy skies in the Southland. Chance for light showers anytime now. With today's high about 65 degrees, tonight we're going to have rain and an overnight low of 54. Tomorrow, more showers and a few thunderstorms as well. It's me, Bobby Rich, the nice man on the radio. So nice, in fact, that I'm going to give you another 30 minutes of nonstop music on KFI. The amazing AM with more money, free cars, and more minutes of music. KFI, Los Angeles. at least love is blue. Something blue, that's good to know. Yesterday, the skies were blue. Remember that? Seems like only yesterday we had a nice day. But today we have clouds. Rain on the way. Light showers sometime later on. More rain tonight and showers and thunderstorms tomorrow.
So keep your dial on 1260 to hear about the next benefit sock hop from the station that takes you to the 60s. 1260 KYA.
1260 KYA.
Motion 1260 KYA, Little Eva from 1962. 4:35 on a midweek Wednesday morning. Paula Kelly here with her every weekday at this time. Rocker size tune. Okay, maybe you're getting up and you're just getting ready to warm up for your early morning exercises before you go to work and plop down behind your desk all day long. Or possibly you're an early morning jogger and you want to warm up a little bit before you leave the house. Well, who says you have to have disco music or current rock and roll to do exercises too? Hey, I'll tell you what, some of the oldie moldies here that you hear on KYA are the best tunes in the world to do your early morning warm-ups to. And if perhaps you're a graveyard worker and you've been sitting at a desk all night long already, it wouldn't hurt you to stand up even if you just have an hour or so left at work and limber up a little with us and make you feel better. I don't even have to explain this morning's rockercise to you. Normally, I have to do a little explaining because obviously there are no visual aids here, seeing as how this is the medium of radio rather than television. But the next tune I'm going to feature for you is something you'll remember, I'm sure, from 1968, and it comes complete with self-contained instructions on how to do the entire warm-up that you'll participate in throughout the 2 minutes and 14 seconds of the song. So all you have to do is listen to the words and do as Simon says on 1260 KYA. Now, don't you feel better? Jeff Mosley can do that. He can do it double time. That's what his girlfriend tells me. Okay, we're going to take you back now to 1969 with the Classics 4 and Traces on 1260 KYA. It's about, what do we got here, 19 minutes away from 5 o'clock. You want to stick around? Betsy Rosenberg and David Hartman come your way at that time with Morning Magazine, an entire 60 minutes of updates on what's going on in the world around you. And, of course, you want to stick around at 6 a.m. The Emperor himself will be in, as he is each and every weekday morning, with much fun and frivolity in living color yet over most of this same radio station. Which reminds me, Jeff Mosley will be along, too, his producer-director extraordinaire. You get a peek behind the scenes here when you listen to Paula. See, I give a little credit where credit is due. And I'm sure Gene would agree with me, right? Jeff is here really early this morning. I never talk about the times he's late.
Shh, here she comes.
In my neighborhood.
I love you, I want you, I need you to become a volunteer zoo guide and help people learn about the animals at the San Francisco Zoo. Doesn't that sound like fun? Orientation starts November 20th. If you're interested, call 661-2023. That is FYI from 1260 KYA.
1260 Radio KYA.
We're KYA and KLHT San Francisco. It's 5 o'clock.
AP Network News. I'm Cynthia Hecht. President Reagan is in South Florida today, vowing to break the power of the mob.
102.7 KISS FM and Love's in Store. That's Fleetwood Mac and I'm Bruce Vidal. It's 7:25. Tell you what, it's been so nice lately. Clear tonight and a low around 55. Fair tomorrow, maybe some high clouds, but a high again of around 82. In the valley, it's 71. Orange County, 67. And 73 right here.
102.7. Kiss FM. Kiss FM.
On 2.7 KISS FM, and Peter Gabriel's got the monkey business for you.
Yeah, but the monkey.
monkey look, don't look too happy. That's right. From Security at Kiss FM. 102.7 Kiss FM. That's Peter Gabriel and Shock the Monkey. And I'm Bruce Vidal at 737.
We're Eastern, America's favorite way to fly. Music Radio, Kiss FM.
Try new improved Fresh Start on your whole wash and clean up. And better than ever before.
I resent that. Here's the WMAQ satellite forecast. It is looking mighty fine for tomorrow. High of 63. Nice and sunny. Tonight's low of 38. Lakefront temp 49 at WMAQ.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Dance.
WMAQ and dance. It was Bojangles dancing with the White Sox coming up this afternoon on your radio station. Just moments away, taking on the Brewers. And we're going to check traffic in just a moment. Maywood Park has watch and bet thoroughbred action Monday through Saturday, post time 1:30. Plan your group party at Maywood any size now. And Captain Joe, circling the city in the Yamaco WMAQ Sky Patrol chopper, please tell us traffic is looking good.
I wish I could, Nancy, but unfortunately, I can't. We're over the Kennedy right now. It looks like a giant parking lot.
And get in on Alamo's Western Sale. Now, you better hurry. $77.95 a week. Alamo is practically giving the West away. Copic on Sports coming up. WMAQ 526. Copic on Sports right after
like
this.
That song.
Yeah.
Shadow of the Andes in the valleys neath the mountains.
Chef Dominic's for sweet, delicious chili and grape sand. Here's Jed Copic.
I love it, Nancy. I just love it when you turn on your sincere voice.
Yeah, chili and grapes.
Absolutely.
And here's Jed Copic.
We have local blood on top right now, down at the 49th Annual Masters Golf Tournament in Day 1 action at Augusta National Golf Course.
All right, it's 5:30 in Chicago and White Sox baseball moments away, and Christopher Michael here has got some news, traffic, and weather for us.
Thank you much, Nancy. Have a nice afternoon. Sunny afternoon today will give way to sunnier afternoons tomorrow and warmer temps, too. We'll check the forecast in a few minutes, but first, our look at traffic. Here with the report is Captain Joe Canzoneri in the WMAQ Amoco Sky Patrol Copter.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Eaton's still doing well at this hour.
And Jerry Taft, what does the weather forecast look like for us?
Well, it looks pretty good. Nancy.
Yeah.
What is bologna?
That's glamorized bologna.
Oh, I was going to say.
Well, I wonder if you pronounce it that
bologna,
way.
Bologna.
No, I never say bologna. Never say that, no.
But when you go to the supermarket, you go, hey, give me the bologna over there, right?
No, well, we want the weather. We say, hey, Jerry, give us the bologna.
The bologna. Well, it turned out pretty nice, actually, this afternoon.
Yeah, Jerry, say, go Sox.
Go Sox.
Yeah, all right.
And we'll be going to them in just a couple of minutes.
The White Sox, Chicago White Sox.
67 WMAQ, your radio station, presents On Base with Tony La Russa. Brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northern Indiana Car-X Muffler Shops. Shh, don't worry. Call the Car-X man. And now, the manager of the Chicago White Sox, Tony La Russa.
Go White Sox, WMAQ.
And that wraps up our market scope for this month. Tonight, thanks to Fred for his DXing skills last month in North Dakota. If you'd like to grow up to be Fred and do a market scope, send your tapes to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. Your help is always greatly appreciated. Now Fred has the musings all queued up and ready to go.
This is Musings of the Members.
Greetings, DX Audio Service members. This is Terry Livingston Hughes in Los Angeles. I will be attending the convention in Minneapolis along with my twin sister, Larry. She's not really a radio enthusiast, but she's ready to go. She knows this is going to be a fun group to have some party with and hang out with, and the Mall of America intrigues her. So you'll be getting the double trouble of Larry and Terry. And I have a question. I'm receiving a station at 1690. And sometimes they broadcast in Spanish, and sometimes they broadcast in Russian. I don't know what else. I hear them more clearly in Eureka than I do here. I have tried to ID them. I heard something about Sacramento, but I don't know if that's where they come from. Does anybody know anything more? Also, when I am at the convention, I'd like to DX with somebody who knows more about Minnesota Cold and the stations you can hear than I do, and targets that I should try for when I'm in Bloomington. 73s. Good day to everybody.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. This is Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin, and I at least have a comment. In the past couple of months, Mike Lance has mentioned that how radio stations have forgotten their past, and indeed this is true, but I would like to mention the station who has remembered its past in a great big way. During the month of April, WVON in Chicago celebrated their 50th anniversary, and one of the ways they did it was on April 6th. They had a gala celebration with different actors and actresses, and also not to mention they had two of the original good guys as the MCs of the event, Lucky Cordell and Herb Kent, the cool gent. They were both there to honor this station. And also on April 1st, WVON had what was called Retro Day, where they played old air checks of all their announcers. When they played soul music, and of course, they also featured one of their gospel programs, their main program called the Highway to Heaven Radio Hour with Bill Doc Lee, and it also presented one of the original station IDs that they used back then, around 64 or 5, where they mentioned WVON AM Cicero and WHFC FM Chicago, now The Loop. And I only heard the last 15 minutes of the whole day, so I just thought I would mention that. Oh, yeah, and one more thing I'd like to mention, and this doesn't happen very often, but this was called a format switchback, I think. WGBW 1590 AM from Denmark, Wisconsin, near Green Bay, during the first of the year switched from the True Oldies channel to ESPN Radio. Well, guess what? 3 months later, they switched back. After one of the NBA games, they switched from ESPN Radio back to the True Oldies channel. So you don't hear that often these days. All right, that's it for sure.
Mark Dernberger in the Musings Control Room with an answer for Terry Livingston Hughes. At the convention, we'll be providing a dial card showing stations in the North Central region, and our non-sighted members will also receive a CD with some short air checks of Twin Cities stations. Hope this will help. We're also trying to set up a listening post with a decent antenna, but that's turning out to be problematic since the hotel is in a noisy location. But we're working on it. It'll be good to meet you, Terry, and your sister, Larry. Safe travels to all. And if you haven't yet registered for the August convention, you'll want to do that soon, since the hotel rooms are filling up fast.
And Terry, the station that I think you're listening to is KFSG. They used to have a call sign of KSXX from Roseville, California. 10,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night. From last I recall, the present format is a Spanish religious format. And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service.
Artificially Sweetened, the Story of Canned Laughter by Miss Selenia. The following article is from the book Uncle John's Bathroom, titled Reader Tunes into TV. What if the studio audience isn't laughing at what's supposed to be funny? What if there isn't a studio audience at all? There's always sweetening. Tweaking a program's audio with a laugh track or some other canned response. This is the story of canned laughter. Silence is deadly. Laughter is contagious. That's why radio comedies in the 1930s often employed studio audiences. Their laughter showed listeners at home which lines were supposed to be funny, and make them think the show itself was well-liked by many people. Television continued that tradition. The problem? Sometimes nobody in the live audience laughed, or they laughed at the wrong parts, or too hard, or for too long. In the late 1940s, CBS sound engineer Charlie Douglas came up with a solution for the problem of underwhelming audience responses. Artificial laughter. Making fake laughter was fairly simple. Create tape loops of ideal audience responses, then insert them wherever they were needed. Charlie Douglas started collecting audio tapes of shows from the CBS archive. He listened carefully to them, analyzing why one laugh worked and another didn't. Douglas soon noticed that laughter came in many varieties. An audience could titter slightly, chuckle, or roar. And then there was the timing, the instant laugh, the surprised laugh, the delayed one, and, with a particularly intelligent or obscure joke, the rolling laugh, as members of the audience got the joke at different times. Douglas realized that dozens of taped laughs would be required. Ideally, Douglas thought, the canned laughter should be hearty, but not too loud, enthusiastic, but not disruptive, and just long enough to not throw off the performer's delivery. He aimed to make it consistent and reproducible, and realistic enough to augment and even replace an actual audience. Douglas compiled his tape loops and programmed them into a device he called the Laugh Box, and that's all that's really known about it. He was so protective of his invention that he wouldn't even let his clients see it. From the accounts of those who caught a brief glimpse, it's likely that Douglas was inspired by the Mellotron, an electronic instrument that looks like a keyboard, with each key playing a recorded sound stored on magnetic tape. The Mellotron later became a favorite instrument of bands like King Crimson and the Electric Light Orchestra. Similarly, the Laugh Box was probably a keyboard with a different kind of laugh attached to each key, and Douglas played it to match the right laugh to the Joker situation. The first show to employ Douglas and his mysterious machine, a short-lived 1950 NBC sitcom called The Hank McCoon Show. Here's how Douglas worked. He'd arrive at a TV studio pulling a dolly that carried his machine in a padlocked box. The session would start with Douglas in an editing room watching the finished recording of the show, and the producer would dictate when to insert a laugh while Douglas took notes. After the meeting, Douglas would head into a room that could be locked from the inside. There, he would add the laughter. Nobody else was allowed to be present or watch him work. Extensive analysis of the laughs Douglas added to shows indicates that each of his Laugh Box keys could offer 10 different variations of the same kind of laugh. And all of his recorded laughs were sped up slightly to pack in more laughter. Douglas could adjust the volume with a foot pedal so the response could begin with a burst or with a rising wave a split second after the joke and top off in time for the next piece of dialogue. Some shows required relatively subtle additions. Others would add a laugh after nearly every line. Hogan's Heroes was notorious for its overwhelming laugh track. The Andy Griffith Show, on the other hand, had a barely audible one. Douglas also added subtle audience noise, uh-ohs, whoops, and hollers, and wild applause greeting a star's first entrance. It took him a full workday to sweeten a half-hour sitcom, for which he charged $100, $800 in today's money. When Douglas was no longer allowed access to the CBS archive in 1955, he expanded his own collection, trying to get clean laughs that didn't overlap with dialogue. One good source, a performance from mime Marcel Marceau's 1956 American tour. He also relied on shows with nonverbal comedy sequences, tapes of which he got from the TV studios and production companies that made them, such as the mime-heavy The Red Skelton Show and the extended physical sight gag sequences of I Love Lucy. Over the years, Douglas accumulated hundreds of laughs, freshening them every so often with new ones and reintroducing old ones that he'd retired years earlier. Aficionados of his work claim to be able to tell what year a TV episode was produced solely by the laugh track. In the 1970s, Douglas's monopoly was broken. One of his proteges, Carol Pratt, split off and formed his own company, Sound One, with new laughs that sounded more natural to some producers' ears. Douglas retired in 1980, and in 1982, he was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Emmy Award. He died in 2003 at the age of 93. Douglas's work is carried on by his son, Bob, but not with his dad's laugh box. Using what could more accurately be called the Laugh Laptop, which contains hundreds of laughs accessible only through proprietary software, Bob does electronically what his father did with hand-cut recording tape. The responsiveness of the new technology is such that sweetening is now routinely added in real time during the 7-second delay on live award shows, including the Emmys and the Academy Awards. Even live sports presentations are sweetened now, with augmented boos, gasps, and cheers from the crowd. As the saying goes, you can't believe everything you hear. This has been Artificially Sweetened, the story of canned laughter, by Miss Selenia, from Uncle John's Bathroom, titled Reader Tunes into TV.
Student-run non-commercial radio stations will benefit from a new FCC policy. The Federal Communications Commission acknowledges the daunting fiscal challenges faced by school-owned stations and the number of institutions that have chosen to get out of the radio business, depriving students of the chance to serve the community and learn what broadcasting's all about. So instead of fining William Penn University the usual $8,000 to $10,000 for paperwork violations at student-run non-commercial educational operations, there's a new policy for the fewer than 500 such stations. William Penn University's KIGC 88.7, Oskaloosa, Iowa, gets the chance to sign a consent decree that requires ongoing training for the staff and the chance to make a $2,500 voluntary contribution to the U.S. Treasury instead of a much larger outright fine. The FCC seems impressed with the candor of KIGC's license renewal application, that some ownership reports were filed late, and that some issues program lists weren't filed at all. So consider this a fresh start for little KIGC, an underpowered Class A running just 230 watts at 121 feet. Even so, the school wants to keep the station, and just a few years ago, it added a degree program in digital broadcasting.
KLOF 1969, Joe Jeffrey Group, and my pledge of love. It's 2:46 in the city on your Wednesday afternoon with Bo Birdie and Bachman Tunnel Overdrive.
WKLO, Louisville.
Okay, we're talking to Tad Murray, also known as Bo Brady, a former WKLO disc jockey. Hey, Tad, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good, John. How's John?
John's doing okay today. I'm glad we finally got a chance to connect and talk about your time at WKLO Radio, which was when exactly?
Oh, that's so long ago. Let's see. Late March 1974 up until early 79, about 5 years. I was on the air for 2 weeks when the big tornado hit.
Oh, wow, wow.
Oh, man, you know, and that was crazy. I'm going, what in the world is going on? But, yeah, in March of 74.
How did you get your job at KLO?
Yeah, let me give you a history. I was raised in Lebanon Junction out in Bulla County,
okay,
a little bitty town. Wasn't much to do in Lebanon Junction except drink and, well, let's say most people in Lebanon Junction are interrelated, if you follow me. Yeah, well, that's fact.
Lots of kissing cousins, huh?
Yeah, so I grew up with Lackey and KLO, and in 68, I was at Western Kentucky University. I was bored, very bored with college, wanted to be on radio. You know, the chicks were a draw, too. You know, who would a girl rather hang out with, her favorite disc jockey or her insurance agent? So,
yeah.
You know, so I had to talk some damn fool into letting me use his microphone. I had a friend at WBRT in Pineville, got a job there. I thought I'd move to Mars. We had snake handlers coming on Sunday morning and all that.
Yeah.
From there, I went to Somerset for a while and to WSAC at Fort Knox, close to home. They were doing rock and roll. A couple of years there, I went to KSO in Des Moines. So then, how did I get the gig? Robin Walker, who was Bob Franklin, KLO program director, he was consulting the competition in Des Moines. And he called me up and asked me if I would like to come to work at KLO. And I went, well, I hummed and hawed and told him I'd think about it. And meanwhile, I was telling the wife to, go pack the bags, honey. So I got to Louisville two afternoons. Didn't like the name Bo Brady. Robin was running promos, though, from Harvey Sloan, the mayor, welcoming Bo Brady to Louisville.
So he made up that name for you, and previously you used your real name?
Yeah, Chuck Brady was on before me, and we sounded quite a bit alike, so he said. And so it was Chuck Brady into Bo Brady trying to, maintain some continuity. So that was it.
So that was the only time that you were Bo Brady during your KLO days?
Yeah. It was Tad Marie when I went to Whamsy, Tad Marie, and yeah, that was it, buddy.
All right, so you got the job at KLO, and you were back closer to home, and growing up listening to Wacky or KLO, did you ever think that you would work at either one of those places?
No, but I wanted to. it was a pipe dream. Big Bill Love was doing nights then, and the signal blew into Lebanon Junction, so yeah, I was like, oh yeah, Bill, man, I want to be like that, and it was great. Yeah, never thought I'd work there, but got directed that way. That's what happened.
You know, at that time, WKLO and WAKY were pretty much fighting tooth and nail. You never knew who was going to be number one at that time in the early 70s. Was there a preference on you to, like, if, now the time has passed, you would have rather worked at Wacky, or was KLO just as good, if not better, as the Super 79?
Well, I liked them both. The thing in Lebanon, KLO's signal was basically north-south. So in Lebanon Junction on down, Bowling Green and all that, it was KLO, and Wacky's was east-west. So here in Lexington, you could pick up Wacky. Great. Spent most of the time listening to KLO. Over the years, looking back on it, Johnny Randolph was so good at picking personnel. He knew talent. And, man, he staffed Wacky, and he was a good counter-programmer, too. So hats off to Wacky, man. They did an incredible job. But it was tooth and nail. Wacky won the ratings most of the time, but... KLO gave him a good battle. Of course, I was there right at the end of the top 40 era.
The music being successful on AM radio.
Yeah, that was it. Tastes were changing in top 40. You wasn't getting it with the younger audience then. Little station in Louisville, WLRS, comes along. They're playing album music and neat stuff. And, gee, music sounds better on FM. All of a sudden, about 1979, that was the decline of both Wacky and KLO. So I got in before it was gone, thank goodness.
It seemed like looking at AM radio at that time, WHAS suddenly came on strong.
Uh-huh.
And if you were listening to AM radio, people were impressed by HAS. They'd brought Gary Burbank in there. Wayne Perkey was doing a good job. They didn't sound like your grandmother's radio station anymore. They became fairly contemporary. They had a great news department. And my observations is that stations like Wacky and KLO kind of wanted to morph into an adult contemporary radio station. Suddenly it wasn't the screaming top 40, or as like in the early 70s at WKLO under Bill Hennis, the I'm boogier than you are, delivery. It seemed like KLO, from the air checks that I've heard, got more AC faster than Wacky. It seemed like it would transition more towards that AC format that was coming on strong than Wacky.
Yeah, to an extent, I guess KLO tried. Robin Walker, Bob got really tired of doing it and decided to bail out. And here comes Lee Gray as program director. Lee was a great talent. He was really not a program director. He was difficult. A little difficult to work with. And
what do you mean by that?
He could be a jerk.
He wasn't very tactful.
Lee? Not at all. No, he was he knew he was a jerk, and he worked at it. But, it was really that time going through the change. He didn't know quite how to handle it. Whatever consultants we had didn't know how to handle it, and that was when the change started. And within 2 years, KLO was country.
You're talking about 2 years from 79.
2 years from 79, 80, late 80, 81. I believe that's right, but... Yeah,
WCII, yeah, after doing that kind of lateral simulcast with the FM after going to the KJ100 thing.
Right, they called me up and wanted me to do mornings at CII as Bo Brady, and I went, no, not interested.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. Let's go back and talk about some of the people that you worked with at WKLO during those 5 years, some of the people that stand out that you remember, maybe you're even friends with still today.
Gee, there were so many. Well, let's see. People were Bill Love, Big Bill Love. Bill's down in Evansville, been there forever. Gary Major. Gary did middays. Super guy. He's still around. We stay in touch a bit. Shotgun Sam Lee. Shotgun's out in Seattle now, I believe. Talked to him on occasion. There was Ty Meredith. Ty, great newsman, super newsman. Dave Straub, also in news. Dave's down in Atlanta now. Barry Steiger. Barry was on news. Shirley Smith, of course. Shirley went on to NPR. And then the guys from around Louisville, new to the town, Gary Griffin, Jackson Smith, Mac Hunter, Hitman Mac. And then, of course, there was Lee. And, you know, like I say, John, there were so many that, you know, stand out that I can't remember them all, can't mention them all. And they were good people. We had some good talent.
Were most of the guys in and out after a year or so, or did you have a lot of people? I know Gary Major was there for a long time. Did you have a lot of folks like yourself that stayed for 5 years, which is basically an eternity in radio then and now?
It was mixed. Bill Love was there for 8 or 10 years, and I guess Gary was there for 7 or 8 years total, and I was there 5. So most of the rest of them in and out. One I remember, Dan Masden, and Dan was working nights, and Dan knew if he continued to be a disc jockey, he wasn't good enough. He'd be there for the rest of his life doing something. So he flipped over to sales, and now Dan, of course, is president of CBS Radio.
So he did okay for himself.
Yeah.
Staying in radio, yeah, yeah.
People went, came and went. Other people stayed. I toughed it out as long as I could.
What about the management of WKLO? Let's see. Robin Walker, you said, was the program director that hired you.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee Gray came after that. Were there any other PDs that you worked for at KLO?
When Lee left, Gary Major came in.
Okay.
He took over program director. That's when I left. Bernie Thompson replaced Ernie Gudridge as general manager.
Yeah.
And Bernie fired me. And it seemed that Bernie didn't agree with the rock and roll lifestyle. And I think he was part of the reason that Bill Love left, too. But we'd stay out all night and party and have fun. And he thought that wasn't befitting of morning men. And Billy, I don't know. But anyway, he let me go.
And this was in 79?
This was in 79, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, pretty much the rock and roll days had died for KLO. It was, you know, had one foot in the grave as far as a big top 40 station, right?
Don't say one foot in the grave. It makes me feel bad. Man, come on now. You know?
So you had a great staff there. Anything that really stands out when you think of your WKLO days, some wacky promotions or things that happened inside or outside the radio station that just kind of crystallizes your Big 1080 experience?
Well, to be honest with you, there was so much going on. You know, over at Wacky and at KLO, we were a bunch of young guys having fun and playing rock and roll. And most times were good. Only the really bad times stand out. And I don't want to go into bad times or badmouth anybody or anything. You know, that's not what it should do. We had fun. All in all, a couple of things I remember. One night I drove down to the station and pulled up in front, and here's Shotgun Sam standing on a turntable with the turntable running, and he's spinning around, standing up on this poor turntable, grinding and grinding and grinding, dancing on it. And thank goodness we had switched to carts, because I'm sure that turntable was shot after that.
Yeah.
One day, this college girl out in Vine Grove, out in Hardin County, was home from Eastern Kentucky University, and she was listening to me on the radio, sunning in the backyard, the day that I told her Elvis had died. And 15 years later, I married that college girl.
Wow.
She tells me about it quite often. Remember the day? I do. And I'm going, yes, I certainly do. So
yep.
That was one of the good and bad memories. Elvis died.
How did WKLO handle that with the Elvis death? Do you remember that? When you found out about it, did you all change your programming? You play a lot of Elvis music, open the phones. What'd you all do?
I believe we were playing an Elvis top and bottom of the hour. I think that's what we did. Nothing overt, but, yeah, it was still a tribute to, the King, and, we did our part.
What about, working in Showcase Studios? That was one of the most famous things about WKLO. It was in a storefront display window, and you guys were there for the entire world to see, to walk by, and I don't know if that glass was bulletproof or not, but or if you
well,
ever needed
mind,
it to be.
Okay, here's a story for you. When the busing problem was going on in Louisville about 74 and 75, somebody came to the studio late one evening, early one afternoon, and apparently with a .22 low-caliber handgun, fired at the window and put a divot in the glass. Still a little bitty hole in the glass. We kept the shades drawn for about a week after that. But if you walk by there right now, the glass is still there, and there's that little bitty hole where somebody fired something at it.
Was that a lot of fun, other than being shot at, to work in a showcase studio? Because I never had that experience. I know Wacky's was kind of a semi-showcase studio where people could walk by and take a look at you. Was that kind of a cool thing?
People could walk by and show you things, too, when they walk by. Uh-huh. Some things you didn't want to see, and others you made mention of. But Bill Love, he decided he was going to streak his show one day. So the only thing he had on in the showcase studio, here's Big Bill sitting there. He had it on his underwear. You couldn't see his underwear. And that drew a little bit of a crowd walking to work. Yeah, the showcase was fun. Got a lot of feedback from it. And people banging on the windows and trying to yell things through triple pane glass and couldn't do it. Yeah, it was fun. Sure was.
Looking back on your broadcast career, was WKLO the highlight or just one of the top five places you worked?
Oh, one of the top five places, yeah. It was good. It was fun. Like I said again, you know, we were young guys. We were having fun. Rock and roll radio and women to boot. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It fit the point for a guy that was 26, 27 years old. Nice thing about KLO and Wacky, a lot of these guys were local. If you called up and said, hey, man, I'm calling from Anchorage. Well, the guy on the air knew where Anchorage was. Another guy called up and said, I'm from Valley Station. I wanted to request so and so and so. Well, the jock on the air knew about Valley Station. He knew how the people felt. And you don't find that nowadays. You know, it's just not there. You know?
So what about leaving there? I guess you said you were fired in 79. Where did you go after that?
Went to WRKA for a brief period, which was WNUU. And while I was there, they changed to WRKA. One day, Coyote called up. He said, hey, man, we're going live with WAMZ. I said, country music? He said, yeah, we want rock and roll jocks to play country music. I said, sounds good to me. So I went to work for AMZ and was there 6.5 years. Now, that was a great place to work.
That does sound like a great job. Why would you ever want to leave WAMZ? I mean, the station was like number one in the market. And
oh, boy. I was dating a girl in Lexington, the college girl. Ralph Hacker called one day. Now, there was another difficult guy to work with. Ralph called and asked me if I wanted to program K93, VLK-FM. Yeah. And I said, no. And then I thought about it, and the wrong brain was thinking about the move. So I came to Lexington, left WAMZ, came to Lexington, and the difference between Louisville and Lexington was night and day. When I got up here, it was a good old boy radio. And I managed to stay with Hacker about 3.5 years, and then it came to an end. Dropped out of broadcasting for about 5 years, tried to do my own thing, wasn't satisfied. Then went to work for J-Corps, which became Clear Channel here in Lexington.
What were some of the things you did when you dropped out of broadcasting?
Well, I worked human resources at Toyota, and it was a good place to work, but looking over your shoulder all the time, the corporate mentality and the corporate situation, I wasn't happy with that. That was in Georgetown.
Yeah.
Let's see. Decided I was going to start a business, importing Scottish and British goods. And that lasted for 4 or 5 years, but the market really wasn't there to pay the bills, so I dropped out of that. I went to Scotland when I left. We went on vacation right. I was leaving WAMZ and got messed up in the Scottish thing. Murray being a fine Scottish name, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Got my kilt in the whole bit. So that turned me on to that, but I found out that wasn't what I wanted to do. And finally, J-Corps called and said, you want to come to work? And I said, well, yeah, of course. So I went to work for J-Corps. They built this brand-new state-of-the-art studios in 99, and everything was fine for a couple of years. And then here comes the Beelzebub of broadcasting, Clear Channel. And when Clear Channel took over, things started changing quickly. Of course, we all know about Clear Channel.
What J-Corps station did you work for?
J-Corps had the Bull, WBUL. There was the Rocker in town, WKQQ, and WLAP. Tom Leach, who does UK basketball and UK football. Tom and I did the morning show for about 5 years, and all of a sudden Clear Channel walked in, and this was when things were getting real tight, about 09. And Clear Channel walked in one morning and said, boys, it's up in 2 weeks. We're going satellite. So Clear saved themselves a whole bunch of money, and we were out of a job.
You talking about WLAP?
WLAP.
Okay.
Sure was. That's when I decided, I think I better just settle back here and sort of semi-retire, which I did. Clear Channel came in, and a couple other things in my life. I got a real good alcohol problem that I decided I better take care of, which I did, thank goodness, and decided I was going to semi-retire. Now, the whore in me says, go get a part-time job in commercial radio. The thinking part of me says, no, don't do it. So right now, the only thing I'm doing, besides taking a bunch of day trips, is reading for the blind, Central Kentucky Radio I. They run on the subcarriers of WUKY and WUOL. They've got 5,000 or 6,000 subscribers. And we do everything from the Kroger ads to newspapers to novels. It's a fun thing to do, and it may be helping somebody.
Now, do you miss radio, being on the air, doing that morning show at WLAP or, playing the hits on WKLO back in the 70s?
I miss playing the hits. Miss playing the hits. Yeah, I like news and sports and all that and the stuff Tom and I were doing, but as far as the boogie-woogie, I still got enough of that. I do miss playing the hits, man. That was fun. Really was. You get to the point in your life, we all have those ups and downs, and I remember asking Alyssa, that college girl, one day I was depressed and low. I said, what have I done with my life? What have I managed to do for somebody else? And she just looked around and said, you made a lot of people feel good. And I said, yeah, I guess I did. And that was it. Yeah. It was a fun time. It was a great time. The whole 40 years was fun.
WKLO. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Wally Warrow in Dallas, Texas. Gordon McClendon is one of the legendary names in radio broadcasting. From his recreations of Major League Baseball games over the old Liberty Broadcasting System to his legendary group of radio stations like KLIF, KILT, KABL, and more, McClendon's name was synonymous with creative radio broadcasting at its best. But it wasn't all McClendon, for he was blessed to have surrounded himself with top-quality people, and over the next few months here on the DX Audio Service, you're going to hear from one of them. Don Keyes was McClendon's right-hand man. He's most responsible for making many of the concepts the McClendon chain of radio stations was famous for into reality. In 2000, Don sat down, collected his thoughts, and recorded a multi-part oral history of working for Gordon McClendon. He issued a compact disc for friends and colleagues in the industry. And thanks to my friend and noted musicologist Bud Bouchard, you'll now be privy to the behind-the-scenes stories of the McClendon era of radio. Don is the consummate storyteller, and the fact that he's got one of those old-school, made-for-radio voices totally enhances the telling of his tales. Here's part one of the McClendon story, as told by Don Keyes on the DX Audio Service.
This is Don Keyes. And this is Gordon McClendon and me. Chapter 1, How I Stopped Calling Him Mr. McClendon. My parents raised me to be polite to not only my elders, but anybody in a position of authority. To this day, I remain polite with traffic cops. To do otherwise is financial folly. When we moved from New England to Dallas in 1947, I quickly learned in school that male teachers were called sir and females, ma'am. Therefore, while working as the 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. DJ at KLIF around 1954, I respectfully referred to our boss as Mr. McClendon. When he might pass me in the hall, he'd usually smile and say, "Hey, Big Don," and I'd respond with, "Hi, Mr. McClendon." I felt flattered that he knew my name. This formal relationship ended one Friday evening. We'd been promoting the fact that Gordon would broadcast a play-by-play recreation of the annual Blue-Gray game at 7 p.m. that Friday evening. Since this was during my air shift, I wondered what role I might play, if any. Maybe I could go home early. Around 6:45 p.m., our chief engineer, Glenn Callison, came into the control room where I was sitting playing my 78s. You do remember 78s, don't you?
loaded down with 10-inch reels of tape containing stadium sound effects, which he proceeded to load onto the rack-mounted Ampex 350s. About 5 minutes to seven, I went down the hall to Mr. McClendon's office. He was nursing a bourbon and Coke and smoking a cigarette. I said, excuse me, Mr. McClendon, it's almost game time. He smiled a condescending smile and said he'd be right there. So I retreated to the control room and queued up my last record of the hour. I asked Callison, who would be reading the commercials, and he said he didn't know, but thought that it would be me since I was the only announcer on duty. At that point, McClendon came bouncing into the booth that was adjacent to the control room and gestured for me to come in with him and for Callison to take over the board operation. Shaking with fear and trying not to show it, I entered the booth with the great man and sat down at the table, which held two microphones. McClendon had already taken his seat and was wearing the only pair of headphones in the room. He could not only hear himself, but could also hear the crowd noise from the tapes. As the sweep second hand on the studio clock hit 7 p.m., Callison pointed at him, opened his mic, and the electrifying words came spilling out in his staccato machine gun delivery. "Hello, everybody, everywhere. This is the old Scotchman Gordon McClendon, from high atop the press box, way up in the azure skies of Hawaii, where tonight..." And on he went, his resonant baritone rich with the romance of the football game, and then rising to a high-pitched crescendo of excitement. A Western Union telegrapher was feeding him ticker-tape reports of what was happening, and that fertile mind, with its uncanny grasp of our language, quickly painted word pictures in the listener's mind. I was entranced by all this, but my reverie was quickly shattered when he said, "There's a timeout down on the field, and that means it's time for Don Keys." With that, he slid over a manila folder containing all the live commercials, pushed the earphones across the table at me, and proceeded to go to the men's room, along with his well-doctored bourbon and Coke. I clamped the headphones on tightly and spoke the immortal words, "Thanks, Gordon," and waded into a series of 5 or 6 30-second spots, all of them little mom-and-pop businesses. As I neared the end of the stack, I kept cutting my eyes toward the door, wondering what the hell I should do if he's not back in time. But sure enough, with his usual disarming grin, he stepped back into the booth. As I breathed a great sigh of relief, he took the earphones just in time for me to say something like, "And now, once again, here is Gordon McClendon. Gordon?" My God, I'd called the boss by his first name not once but twice, and I was still gainfully employed. Being terribly smart, I sensed somehow that saying, "Now here's Mr. McClendon," just wouldn't sound right. The rest of the first half went without incident, and I was actually getting comfortable in my new role, although it was difficult to maintain a feeling of presence without the headset. As the clock crawled toward halftime, I began to wonder what we would do during that time period when there was no athletic activity on the playing field. I skipped out to ask Callison, and he didn't know either. I didn't have to wait long to find out. Just as I entered the booth, McClendon nailed me down with the words, "There's the gun signaling the end of the first half. I'll be back shortly, but now to describe the colorful halftime activities, here again is Don Keys." I thought I'd have a stroke. He flipped me a grin along with a solitary headset and left the room, presumably for a Coca-Cola refresher. It was on that night when I learned to truly ad-lib. The Western Union telegrapher had typed out a line about the card section doing something in red and blue, and then apparently had gone for a hot dog break. I did the only thing I could do, other than crying. I clamped the cans on tightly, shut my eyes, and described everything I'd ever seen or hoped to see at halftime. Not being a real sports fan, especially for this game, I really had no idea who was playing and couldn't have cared less. I had no idea of the various school colors worn by the bands. I used words like brilliant, eye-catching, resplendent, gaudy, always skirting around the real issue of color. Callison's tapes were still playing under me, and every time one of those annoying stadium three-piece combos replete with kazoos would strike up a tune, I'd say, "Let's go down there and pick up some of that good band music," while gesturing to Callison to turn up the tape volume. And then while the so-called band music was playing, I'd sit there and try to figure out what to say next when the music stopped. Oh, I did the usual about the dog in the field trying to get the stick from the bass drummer. I had the neighborhood pigeons flying in formation over the stadium. I had the matronly lady in the flowered hat leaning over the rail trying to get someone's attention on the bench. And, of course, I could always hide behind those good old 30-second spots, which I did as often as possible. To KLIF, this was a chance to show off Gordon's considerable skill and make a few bucks from what was really an obscure football game. To me, I was center stage at the Super Bowl. This went on for 22 painful, unending minutes. 22 minutes of ad-libbing, a great work of sheer fiction. 22 minutes until he hit the door with a fresh drink and a mischievous leer, which gave me the opportunity to say, "And now to continue to describe tonight's game, here once again is the old Scotchman Gordon McLendon." And that's how this wonderful man became Gordon instead of Mr. McLendon. As my pal Kent Burkhart would say, "I know because I was there."
From Dallas, Texas, Wally Warrow for the DX Audio Service.
According to a Harris survey, 6 in 10 predict the demise of terrestrial radio within 5 years. This story by Carl Henkel, and it appeared in the May 14th edition of the Detroit News. Nearly 60% of Americans predict the death of terrestrial radio that will happen within 5 years, according to results from a Harris Interactive survey released on Tuesday. Market research firm Harris, on behalf of Sticker, a online internet radio service, surveyed 2,066 U.S. adults last month and found that most adults are choosing on-demand media sources such as Pandora and TuneIn over terrestrial radio options, citing the ability to avoid commercial advertisements as a heavy influence. Quote, "We're relying on our smartphones and mobile technology now more than ever," unquote, said Noah Shenock, CEO of Sticker, in a statement. "We're a nation on the go, and we want access to our favorite radio shows and music at a time that's convenient for us. With latest advancements in streaming technology, apps like Sticker put entertainment right at your fingertips," unquote. The survey found that students may be leading the shift to on-demand and streaming media. More than 71% of U.S. adults who are students predict Americans will primarily listen to streaming radio over AM and FM radio within 5 years. Those ages 18 to 34 are twice as likely as those ages 35 to 54 to listen to music via on-demand sources, the Harris poll showed. Ed Cohen, Vice President of Measurement Innovation at marketing research firm Arbitron Incorporated, in an interview with the Detroit News last month said that 90% of adults aged 25 to 54 listen to radio weekly, and it's still the top choice amongst drivers for in-car entertainment. Quote, "There's a share of the pie for all types of radio platforms, but you really can't replace what radio offers at the local level," unquote, said Kim Myers, Senior Manager of Media Relations for Arbitron, in a telephone interview. Arbitron data from March shows that approximately 242.8 million Americans listen to terrestrial radio on an average weekly basis, up 1.6 million from the same month a year ago. Radio stations have moved quickly to offer online and smartphone streams of their terrestrial content. But even some of the terrestrial radio business has decided to take their careers to on-demand media sources. Pat DeLuca, who hosted a popular morning show in Canton, Ohio for 6 years, recently started his own group of streaming media stations. "Everybody I've talked to about this and everybody who knows that we're doing this agree that this is the new way," said DeLuca, who said in his 2012 interview with the Vindicator newspaper of Youngstown, Ohio, "That's not in dispute. This is the way that everything is going." And this article was 6 in 10 Predict the Demise of Terrestrial Radio Within 5 Years by Carl Henkel of the Detroit News. You can comment to Carl by email at khenkel, K-H-E-N-K-E-L, at detroitnews.com or call him at 313-222-2504. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Fred Vobey. That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service for this month. We'll see you in our Firecracker edition in July of 2013. Hey, don't forget to give us some names and addresses of places we can send PR information to and to get us some new members. Until next time, 73 Good DX, and get out and support Radio 101.